What's going on, mountain bikers and racing fans? This is Jason Schroeder. We are back for round two of the 2024 UCI World Cup downhill season with the pre-race discussion as part of our Vital MTB downhill fantasy. Each round, we're going to break down which racers you should keep an eye on going into the weekend, who's fast in years past, try to give you some insight to help make the best fantasy picks. Because of the second time we've done this, we only ran fantasy for the first round of this year. I'm going to run through the rules once again for anybody who didn't play in Fort William. Basically, each round you get $1 million budget to build a race team. Rider values change from race to race based on past results from both previous seasons and races. There's no limit on team size, but you must include at least one rider from all four categories. It's elite men and women, junior men and women. Fantasy closes for team building after qualifying and semifinals. Points are only awarded for riders who finish in finals. Points are paid the same as UCI points in finals, so 250 for elite categories, 600 for juniors for first place. Play, all you got to do is make a Vital account. Each round, the top five players win prizes from SRAM RockShox, FSA, Maxxis, and Trolley Designs. And there's also a top five overall prize at the end of the season for players. For the race this weekend in Bielsko Biała, Poland, first place is going to win a RockShox Pike Ultimate Fork. Second place gets a Trolley Design Stage Helmet. Third place wins some FSA Gravity Bar and Stem. Fourth place gets a set of Maxxis tires. And again, fifth place gets a Vital T-shirt, which is still priceless because we don't sell them. Again, for this talk, I'm joined by John Hall from Intent Cycles, who's well known as Aaron Gwynn's mechanic over the past decade and Vital contributing editor and co-host of our Be Practice podcast, Tanner Stevens. Thanks, dudes, for joining me again. Let's chat about some downhill racing.
Thanks for having me, dude.
Yeah, for sure. Fort William went off with a bang. I would say it was one of the more exceptional and awesome kickoffs to a season we've had in a few years. Make sure to listen to our Be Practice podcast where we talked about all the post-Fort William gossip, who did what. Also chat about Dakota and his weekend, why his bars are so damn high. But just 2 weeks later, we're going back into the second round at a brand new venue, which offers a clean slate for racing. And there isn't any past history to kind of base off of who might do what. Before we kind of get into talking about things, John, from you going to a bunch of races over the years and going to new venues probably a handful of times, how do you go about setting up a bike on a whole new track? Where do you decide to start? What do you think is like the hardest part just for racers showing up this week?
I'm a big fan of consistency, and consistency builds confidence. Confidence equals speed. So in terms of setup, like I never encourage doing anything crazy. Literally the biggest thing, so showing up to a new venue is the most important part for me, was walking the track. Over the years, I wouldn't always do track walk at familiar venues. So Fort William, Leo Gang, Val de Sol, like the ones you've walked 100 times, it's like I kind of know those ones. But every time at a new venue, I always made sure to walk it. And it was, I'm not spotting lines, I'm not doing anything like that. For mechanic, it was just my reference points. So I knew what Aaron was talking about when he came down about a certain section or how the bike was feeling. In terms of setup, after track walk, it was just determining what tires we wanted to start on based off of current conditions and potential weather changes. So we would be watching the weather, what weather was going to be doing on the first day of practice. And so it was like, well, okay, if it's dry, we're going to start on these. But rain in the forecast, have a set of mud tires set up, you know, that kind of thing, or maybe a combination of the two. And so that was really all we would do for setup. I think it's a big misconception that every track requires a wildly different setup. And some, obviously there's the riders that like to tweak setup a lot, but I think to build off that consistency and to build that confidence, we would always just start with previous settings. You know, we did our homework in the off season, showed up to the first round, and typically we weren't that far off. And if we were, we had to get it figured out really quickly at the first round. So then you go into your next round, you kind of know, like, all right, like I'm pretty well set up. So aside from maybe a click or two maybe a small pressure change or spring rate change in the fork or shock, like no crazy setup changes. Just walk the track, figure out what kind of tires you want, you're going to start on, and probably start on the exact same settings as you did the week prior. Or sometimes if you got away from those, your base setting quite a bit in your previous round, sometimes riders will just go back to that base setting and start there again. And so the key takeaway is familiarity. So whatever you're most familiar with. So usually that's the setting you came off the last track with is what you're going to be most familiar with. So you're just going to start there and tweak. Or if you got, like I said, if you got away from your base setting quite a bit from the previous round, then you're just probably going to go back and start at your base setting again. Yeah, but this track looks interesting for sure. From what we see, obviously the internet thinks they know best. Without
they being do there. Know best.
Yeah, they do know best, right? It looks at first glance, it looks very smooth, groomed, and lots of jumps and features. All that looks to be true, but to be fair, that it's a brand new track. Like I would expect it to be perfectly groomed and prepped. And if it's their prerogative to have a lot of jumps and features, then sweet. It doesn't bother me any. Maybe that'll be exciting to watch depending on where the camera angles are and all that kind of stuff. It could add for some cool stuff, some scrubs and some different little sidelines and things like that of coming off the side of the lip or inside outsides and setups and stuff like that. So it could change some stuff. I know right now it doesn't look like there's a lot of roots or rocks, but again, it's a fresh track. I wouldn't expect there to be anything there yet. So, I personally really like that. It's going to be really cool because now you have a brand new track that's never been ridden that professional riders get to burn the lines into. So now you get to see, it's like giving a professional artist a blank canvas, and it's like they get to cut the lines in, and we're going to get to watch where those develop and how they develop, and those guys are going to get to develop them themselves rather than coming into like a preset track that you've ridden 100 times and you know that you got to get set up outside to cut this inside and there's holes in this section, but oh, they filled it in from last year, but whatever, it's going to get blown out anyways and that kind of stuff. Like this, nobody knows what's going to happen here, how it could develop, if there's roots under there, if there's rocks under there. We can't tell when we're walking a track that we're checking, like you step on it and if it's real soft, you kind of like kick it up a little bit, you're like, okay, like there's some spider web roots under here, all of this is going to get blown away and bomb holed out, like be ready for that. So I think it's bitching. Of course, like I said, of course it's smooth and prepped and everything's perfect right now because it's a brand new track and nobody's ridden it. But let's see Chris Kilmurray's before and after photos. The first shots from track walk, and then he'll go walk the track after the race. And let's see what those holes look like and some of those sections look like after 250 riders go over it for a week.
Yeah, it'll be I was just looking up the weather right now because I had it, and it looks like there's a fairly good chance we'll get at least some moisture falling throughout the week, which only adds to all of that.
It's a world.
Yeah, right. It was crazy to be, it seemed like most of Fort William this year was dry as could be, like the driest Fort William ever. And your point about walking the track and it looks all smooth right now, Fort William looked pretty smooth on track walk day this year. And by the time they raced it, it was disgusting.
Yep.
So
yeah, they do that at Fort William and Battle Soul a lot. Last year at Battle Soul, they trucked in, dude, I swear, 1,000 yards of dirt, like, and just filled holes. There were stumps that were like 3 feet tall that were like 6 inches tall in some spots, dude. Like they filled it in, and by the end of the weekend, it was just an absolute
heinous,
dude, disgusting. Holes everywhere. And so, and they do the same thing in Fort William. It starts nice, but it gets beat up.
The
dirt looks pretty dark as well. So
I think too, it looks like, I mean, it's Poland, right? It's Eastern Europe ish and so it's got that real black, brown, dark dirt.
Yep.
That rock
old soil
that rock underneath of it. I think there's going to be, from the looks of it, a lot of roots, but again, not there. So it's really tough to tell without walking it and seeing it personally. So tough to make that judgment from where we're at.
I think it'll get rooty in the lower bits, like pretty quickly as well.
Yeah. I think it'll be cool. It'll be, like I said, it'll be smooth and it's going to change very quickly. So I think that's going to be one of the keys as these riders progress through practice and qualifying is that track's not going to be the same as it was their previous run, whether it's practice or they're going to get their practice in the morning for qualifying. And that qualifying run, something's going to be drastically different. It's that fresh of a track and things are going to change very quickly. So that's going to be the challenge is adapting quickly, I think. So that'd be my guess.
Yeah. I think the contrast between the smooth jumps more so, and then those fresh wood sections is going to be kind of hard to manage on the bike setup side of things.
Mm-hmm.
Do we think with how much electronic suspension stuff we saw at Fort Bill, even though we've only looked at like some videos of the track and mostly photos thus far, it kind of seems like we'll see people running flight attendant, the Olin's lockouts, the same thing again, to your point, Tanner, like it'll be jump heavy, bermy, bike parky in sections. And then it looks like when it does get more loamy raw, it also gets maybe a little bit steeper than the rest of the track. It'll be, I don't know. I'm curious what your take is on that too, John, like electronics and everything is making its way into suspension these days.
I love it. Dude, I'm a tech guy. It's Aaron and I were fighting for lockouts and pedal platforms, dude, for every single year. We were asking for it, trying to get it, get something made. We were pushing for it. We knew we needed it. So I love that it's finally coming out now. I'm a little bummed that I didn't get to play with it as much as everybody is right now, but happy to have been part of pushing those boundaries. I think it's great. It's something that is 100% an advantage. And if you can use it correctly, whether it's automated or it looks like some of the flight attendant stuff has the buttons on the left where they can turn it on and off, or maybe have a couple different modes there. I think that's what Loic's been using for a while now, is essentially just switching some modes. Could still be wrong. Never know with Loic. But there's 100% time to be made on those smoother flowing sections. And the motorway at Fort William was, in my opinion, it's always been a key section, but that the suspension lockouts or the platforms, never a lockout, doesn't completely lock it. But the platforms and the modes were 100% beneficial. And if you didn't have something there, you're off. So look at the podium and how many people had something on their bike. I think it was four out of the five.
So, everybody but Dak.
So
he doesn't want to talk about it anymore.
What's that?
He doesn't want to talk about it anymore. So sour subject with old Dakota.
I'm sure it is. Again, I didn't listen to the D practice podcast before this, but I spent a couple of years on a team with Dakota, so I know what that conversation was and how it went, and I know what he wants. And I know what we've been asking for a long time. So I hope he gets it soon. I hope there's something that he can get to help him out in that department soon. I think he's proved it.
Yeah.
I was even speaking with Joe Breeden. So he has a mechanical one on his shock. And he was like, dude, it was a massive advantage on that motorway. And he goes, specifically there. Mm-hmm. It was 100% faster than no setup. So I think we're going to see more and more of it. And to the point where it'll just be normal.
Yeah. It's cool. Definitely that next level of bike setup and honing a setup in for the track on a given weekend. And it seems like I kind of like that the track this weekend will have, it looks like it has kind of black and white sections, very different sections, like the top bit being that one style and then having sections that break it up makes it where you need to be thinking bigger picture about your setup, and the riders that have the ability to have two setups at the flick of a switch or a button, pretty sick. Definitely an advantage. I've heard Dak was saying Loic has buttons on both sides of his bars, and I went back and watched his run, and you can see that he has buttons on both sides, and I'm just like so curious what he has going on. Like, I think it seems like I haven't looked closely at photos, but I would imagine something's happening to his fork as well. Like, I don't know if it's just his shock. Like, we have like our slow-mo video on YouTube, and there's a few clips of different riders hitting the jumps on the motorway. It's insane how stiff his suspension is when he lands compared to some of the other riders. Like, even some of the riders with electronics on their bike. It's pretty impressive.
If I were to take a shot in the dark, and I'm only guessing, but if he has two setups, more than likely previously it was probably a one button or one pod setup that did his fork and his shock. I don't think it may have initially just started with the shock only, but I've seen some stuff on his fork that's had some blinking lights and on top of the damper. Previously, so I think then it switched to probably one pod that maybe simultaneously put the fork and the shock in like the same whatever position. Mm-hmm. Maybe now that's separate. I don't know why you would though. I don't know if that would be an advantage. That's a lot to think about too. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people forget about, or it's easy to look over. There's so much going on in your race run, and so it's another testament to how good Loic is with that stuff. You have to be so switched on and aware of when you're going to be pushing a button, what button to push. That's why they're so big and different colors, mm-hmm. and in a specific pattern, and why he always runs it when he's testing. It's so he's constantly used to it. He's not just putting it on for a race and having to learn it. That's the biggest thing. When Aaron and I tested it, it was he would put it on and then forget to shut it off and mm-hmm. like have his shock be active again. And then I remember specifically, I think it was Australia one year, and we had it a lockout on there or a pedal platform, and he clicked it on for the section that he wanted it for. And then there was like a rock section afterwards, and he went blasting through there, and he was just like, he's like, dude, I went for a friggin' ride, and I've spaced and forgot that I shut my shock off and I turn it back on. And so I don't know, maybe again, going back to Loic setup, if he has two, one could be connected to data. One could be doing the suspension stuff to turn his data on and off, or maybe he's just separated the characteristics between one for his fork and one for his shock. But again, I hesitate saying that because that's a lot to coordinate in your mind when you're doing what he does on a bike.
I wonder if one's just an off, like it's all modes on one and then one just opens or whatever. So then like, if you don't know where you're at in the modes or something happened, you can just hit, like, you always know it's one side, like a kill switch.
Maybe. I haven't seen the switch either, so I don't know what it looks like.
Yeah.
I want to bug Jack to go take photos next or like this week and get photos of like his fork and bars as much as you can, because I think everybody is now tuned into it, and I didn't look for a long time, but it was tough to find photos of it, even just from like this weekend.
It's tough to get them. I was at the bottom in the finish line corral at Leo Gang last year, and the moment Loic comes across that line, that bike goes behind the his team manager or a staff member grabs it immediately, and a jacket is draped over the bars and the front end. So
wow,
it's tough to even catch a glimpse of it. And that's when we were all trying to figure out what he had going on with the bike, and there's quite a few people behind the scenes that knew early on what was happening there and knew kind of how that linkage worked. And it was interesting how that works. And I think it would work really good if you could figure it out. Obviously it worked well for him, but yeah. Give Jack that challenge and wish him luck, because he's going to have to get a long lens and hang out and watch that pit for a long time to see it uncovered.
Well, it's funny because I'm looking back right now at we have photos of winning bikes, like winners bikes from Fort William, but there's such a side shot that you can't really see his handlebars. And then like the screen grab from practice where he had all the fairings and stuff on his bike, you also can't see his bars. But if Jack was just like in the finish corral during practice, you'd be
able to.
Or in the start gate. Yep. There's times when you can't hide, Loic.
Yeah.
And then that way everybody online can figure it out for us.
So. Yeah. And I know Loic's game too, and he's really good at it because Gwinny was good at it for a long time. There was a lot of stuff and a lot of information that he just withholds or doesn't allude to. And he does that on purpose. And it's not a mind game, but it's just a withholding of information that then makes everybody question everything. And sometimes it sends people into a tailspin. And if you're one of those people, he freaking got you. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't care if he actually has something that's an advantage or if it's just something that appears to give him an advantage. He's living rent free in so many people's heads because of what he's working on. I mean, look, we're talking about it right now. So
yeah,
as an athlete, and if you're racing against him, my advice is to stop worrying about what Loic's doing and worry about yourself and what you need to do to beat him, because you don't have what he has and you're not going to get it unless you're him. So don't worry about it.
I mean, even Finn doesn't have what he has.
Yeah. Acknowledge it, like, and see, like, okay, he has something that does or doesn't give him an advantage. Can I get something that gives me an advantage? Like, cool. Like, don't completely ignore him. I understand that, but he's living rent free in a lot of people's heads right now because of what he's doing. And totally. He's just grinning from ear to ear with it.
I mean, your point about him always riding with it so that it's just a familiar part of his bike, that doesn't mean he's taking advantage of whatever it does to his suspension every race weekend. It's just on there, you know, just like they're not pulling off. So who knows? I mean, obviously he did use it last weekend, but who's to say he uses it this weekend or where he does, you know? Yep. I mean, maybe we're thinking about it all wrong. Maybe the settings he has optimize the bike for the rougher sections, and you know, maybe it's less about firming up and more about like whatever, opening up, who knows, or temperature or something. Like, you never know.
Yep.
All right, it's a lot of talk about Loic. He's getting a lot of coverage with his crazy Olin stuff. Maybe one day we'll know what's in the box.
Yeah, maybe.
Cool. I think that pretty well covers the track. By the time people are listening to this, there likely will be early GoPros coming out, and it will be really fun to watch it develop throughout the weekend. And I think it'll play into riders' favors that are more experienced with just the whole race weekend and the limited time and taking advantage of those 6 to 8 runs you might get, where probably will be tough for some of the newer juniors, even just first year elites that are trying to get up to speed and learn a track.
I was thinking about that point almost exactly the other day about when I was thinking about things I could talk about. And that was, you pretty much nailed it. That is going to be a factor more than, say, like Fort Williams' factor was that it's so long, so physical, so tough, right? Mm-hmm. But there are, you heard Asa. He said he sat there on the couch for 2 weeks and studied GoPro. There's that much footage of that track where he knew before he showed up every single rock, every single line, and everywhere he needed to go to be fast from every winning run, more than likely. So with this new track in Poland, nobody has that. It's a blank slate. It's fresh as can be. And like, to your point, experience will show from those guys that can get up to speed. They can put all that behind them. They don't care that it's a new track, and they're going to find the fastest line so quickly and then just start going. And those juniors, those first year elites, they're going to sit there and go, "Frick, I don't know where I'm going." They're just trying to learn the track. Whereas like these experienced and these top guys will have learned the track in 2-3 runs, watch their GoPros while they're taking a break, they're getting the bike worked on, and they're going to watch the run again. And then they're going to go up, they're going to do another run, they're going to GoPro it. And then they're going to get a change done, and they're going to watch their GoPro again. And so they're watching and doing it every run. Yeah, learning it. It's going to be a challenge.
Mm-hmm. Yep. A lot of data on our data acquisition things on bikes this weekend. And I imagine a lot of team managers in the woods with stopwatches or the, is it specialized. It has their little timing systems, little set up like on sections themselves, which is like amazing to me. love that.
It's the free laps out.
Yeah. Free laps out. They kind of have their own. And it's funny because that one beeps as it comes by, or as you go by it, it'll make a little beeping sound. And funny little off story here, Aaron, I don't remember what track it was, would have been 2 years ago, I think. And he was up on track and he saw their little sensor sitting there and he was like stopped looking at a section and he just like walked up to it and just started like waving his foot by it. So it was like beep, 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 beep. And Loic's dude was like down the track and he's like looking at his thing. He's like, what the heck, dude? And he looks up and then Aaron's down there and Aaron just waves at him and he's like, oh. So there's fun, some fun banter with it too. Like guys, they mess with each other, but it's for sure an advantage. They're timing their own sections. They know where they're fast, but some of these data acquisition systems have their own timing system on them too. And you can set your own splits in it. And so once you've done a complete run, you can download it and figure out where you're faster or slower and set your own splits with your software. So Loic and them are just doing it up on the track instead. So it's not new or common, but he's certainly the most prevalent one. He's got the biggest team up there, probably has at least two, I think three guys on track now at different locations, relaying information, both with radio and timing.
Dang, man. Just think about how fast you and I would have been, Tanner, if we had that. That's all we were missing this whole time.
If someone would have set up my suspension, just having
with electronic,
making sure my tires were pumped up to the right PSI, not 30.
It's such an advantage. Even when Aaron got hurt, but I still went to all the World Cups last year, that I was that guy. And so we just had a WhatsApp group chat, and I would video our guys, and I would time other riders just with stopwatch. And to having the advantage of somebody sitting there watching for you, because if you think about it, just pick out one section of any track and you're on a line and you think you're good and you know that there's another line, but you're like, nope, like I'm comfortable and I'm good and I'm faster here. And if you have somebody that can sit there and honestly tell you and say, hey dude, get on the other line. Like, and then the question is like, sometimes there is a line where it's like, it's questionable which one's faster. And you want your rider just to take the one that they're most comfortable on. But then there's times where it's like, hey man, this line over here is a second faster every single time. And so I would rather you risk it a little bit to be on that line and get that second and start practicing it than completely miss out on it. And so it's a huge advantage just sending videos and they get down to the bottom and they can relay back up. Can you stand in this section? What's happening here? It just speeds the whole process up of learning the track and almost building that confidence in them that they are on the right line.
Yeah.
That's half the battle too. Not even that. It's just, you know, when you're doing a line, you're not sure if it's faster or not. You have somebody that says, hey dude, I stood here for 30 minutes. You're on the fastest line. And it's like, sweet. Don't have to worry about that one anymore. On to the next. It just removes any doubt. So
yeah,
it's so important now. And for a while, it was only top teams that did that. And then now it's every single team has at least one person up there.
I mean, I just think about the amount of times I've spent 10 to 15 minutes standing on the side of the track in practice while riding, trying to figure out which line was faster and how they're wearing, like how they're getting broken in or whatever. And then getting down to the bottom and then having to go up again, but like losing that 10 to 15 minutes of practice or what could have been GoPro review or changing something on the bike.
Yeah.
Or even how do I look in that section? And having somebody there that you trust and will be honest with you without just hurting your feelings. And it's like, that's the other thing. It has to be the right person too. It can't just be some random person up there that you don't know or trust. Like I could confidently stand there and say, Joe, you're slow right here. Like you're on the right line, but you need to go faster. And Joe goes, thank you. I wasn't sure if I was going fast enough there or not, or where I could push. Knowing that I need to push there answers that question and he can go.
Yeah, sometimes you don't even know that you can go faster through a line.
100%.
You think you're going as fast as you can.
Yep. Yeah, and then you show them a video and you go, look, here's Lori Greenland. Watch this. And you go, oh, I didn't even know I could go that fast. Okay, like that's no problem. I just wasn't going fast there. Mm-hmm. So it helps with all that kind of stuff too. It's in my opinion, it should be a paid position on every single top team.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. Well, there's going to be a lot of those people floating around this weekend.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, moving along. A few injuries to add to the list, unfortunately, that won't be lining up this weekend after Fort William. Lucas Cruz, unfortunately, broke his femur at Fort Bill, and he's already had surgery. It sounds like he's at least on the road to recovery. It sounds a little rough at the moment, but hope all that goes well. See him back in time when he's ready. Chris Hauser had like a gnarly tree slam in practice. That was
dude,
violent, very violent. I'm glad somehow he only dislocated his finger, but he ended up say only because that's a tough one to hold on to bars with. But he didn't race in Fort William, and not sure if he'll be back for Poland. Seems like there's a pretty good chance we'll be lining up this weekend. So. And the other big one
said, on Instagram, did he post something? Back. Yeah. Sick.
Yeah.
I was going to say that tree that Chris hit, like, doesn't need to be there. That thing has been a menace for a few years in that section. Every time we've ran that section, like, we walk the track and we come around, we're like, dude, can we please move the tree? It does, like, it is a definitive choice to go left or right of it. And if you're hesitated at all, that's what happens.
Yeah.
Or if you get offline like a tiny little bit, like it's just there to hug you. It's not pretty.
Yeah, that's a weird one. I can't think of like too many other tracks that you split trees at too many moments. So
there's maybe a few there, but it's like it's no problem because you're coming down a straight, you see it, you know it's there, and you're committed. Mm-hmm. Like that, like you're, it's kind of just like you come out and it's like there, and it's like you got to be set up and ready for it. So at least there's a pad on it.
True. Very true.
In the US there'd be no pad.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Unfortunately there was no pads for Greg Minnaar when he jumped from the top ropes twice. And
Greg,
dude, I know. Like I said in the B-Practice podcast, like easily the biggest bummer from the weekend with so much hype behind his team change and the new Norco bike and just everything surrounding it. And the latest update as we're recording this is he's a grade 3 shoulder separation with bone shards in his AC joint, which to me sounds like your season's over for a bit, but apparently he's going to try to come race in Poland. He's going to see how it feels leading up to it. And I guess on one hand, I understand that like he's got a lot behind him. There's a lot of momentum that he's built with everything he did in the off season. So it's got to be so hard to come out. I mean, obviously with Lucas getting hurt as well, like tough hits for that team.
Yeah. I mean, he's going to give it a red hot crack no matter what. It's potentially his last season. And so he's not going to go out on the first round like that. If he can muscle through it or get through the pain, they're going to have to tape the ever living crap out of it. And to hold it in, knowing that injury, but as he said in his post, he's had that injury before. It's nothing he hasn't dealt with. He knows the recovery process. He can deal with it. So as long as he can ride, it's difficult to ride at your potential with that injury. But this will be, I mean, of all tracks, if it's as smooth as it looks, depending again how it develops, like it could be the best track for him to ride. And then go into what is it, another
couple weeks? Break. And
if he can just use that time to recover, or he sits this round out and determines he can't ride, and then he's got a good solid
4 weeks, yeah,
like good 4 weeks of recovery. So we'll see. It's not the last we'll see of him this season, though.
Yeah,
he just needs to put that Lucha Libre mask back on and come out from the top ropes safely next time.
Those are big slams there too, and it's like in the two sections that you just don't slam like at all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, not sweet. Well, pulling for you, old Greg. Want to see you out there. I had a few notes here with just fantasy things after the first round, because there was people chatting in our forums about it a little bit. I want to clarify again, you can add as many riders to your team as you want. You just have to have a rider from each category. So there's strategy involved there. There's strength in numbers. There's trying to pick some winners and maybe backfill it with some other people that might have standout weekends. But use all of your $1 million budget you have. You can build as many people as you want. Spomer did tell me that he is going to adjust pricing for the second round to make it more appealing to actually pick people that are going to win the race. Because for the first round, there's a lot of strategy. You have like 70 riders to pick from for finals, roughly 75, something like that. And I think like all the people that had the best or the most points after the first round, I don't think anybody had winners from the elite classes on their team. So trying to balance that out to make it more lucrative to actually add someone like a Valley Hall or a Luik Bruni to your team, as well as be able to pick people that are going to be like 30th to 20th or top 10 in the women's field, whatever that might be. So we're open to suggestions and changes. We have reasoning behind most of the things we're doing. Same as kind of our whole pre-chat about the UCI and holding events and all that. Like, a lot of people are bringing up that it changes the gameplay, closing it after qualifying in semifinals. Like, there's no reason to pick wild cards on your team because you can wait and see how everybody's doing. The counter to that is that if we close after qualifying with qualies and semis on the same day now, that time is changing in the world at each round, depending on where it is. If you're in North America, that means that you'd have to get your picks in by like 3 or 4 in the morning, the day of qualies and semis. And then with weather, it's just unpredictable knowing if there will be a schedule change. It's a lot easier for us just to be 12 o'clock or whatever it is at night before finals day. That's when you got to get your picks in. Personally, I think that gives you the opportunity to like see how people are trending throughout the week. And Fort William's a good example. There weren't obvious picks. There was hopefuls, but not the same person won qualifying, semis, finals, time training. It's different people. People get scattered, and there's still a lot of names to pick from. I Tanner, you had a good point of it's fun to have more horses in the race, and it's good to know that the horses you pick are actually in the race. So, yeah, get creative with it. You could try to do, I'm going to pick all the juniors because they're a little bit cheaper, but they don't pay as many points. You could try to pick all the women because your guaranteed top 10 is going to pay points, but there hasn't been a proven theory to this. I thought for sure I had the best strategy, and I'm like 200th place. So yeah, somebody out there thinks they haven't figured out.
Spomer, he's like top 30 or something right now.
What's really funny is what's that?
Global top 30?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like 35th after the first round.
I just looked. I'm like 1,415th place global.
And like better than mid-pack.
I feel like I had a solid team.
Right?
That's how I felt too. And I'm 1,000-something as well. Like, I might even be 2,000. No, I'm 2,481. And I was like, my team was sick. But I also
yeah, right. We have to make our own league of just the three of us and see who's doing what.
I'm diving in next weekend.
Like, well, so Saturday.
I like the Moneyball approach. I'm a Moneyball type guy. So I for each person in my category, I go for like, so yeah, to pick your one person in each category, that's my horse that I think can win. Mm-hmm. And then after that, it's a Moneyball approach. I'm going into stats, mm-hmm. knowledge of their life, previous results,
relationships,
averages, where they're training, how they've been doing, national series standings. Like, let me see where you're at up against the rest of everybody, and then make like educated decisions. It obviously didn't work, but
you're over there with spreadsheets. You're connecting dots on where things are going. And I
don't want to turn my camera right now because the whole other side of my room is just a crime scene.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I was texting with Spomer on Saturday after qualifying in semifinals because I was probably the 15th time I adjusted my team. And I texted him. I was like, I hope I do bad so that the next round I don't have to spend so much time on this, because I'm like so invested thinking that this is going to be the best team possible. And he was like, you can't win. Like, none of us can win because people will think the game's rigged. And then he got 30-something. I'm like, very careful, man. People think it's rigged all of a sudden.
I think you should shut it off after time training. Like, give everybody a little bit of a glimpse of speed and where they're at. But it still requires you to know a little bit more about all the riders, because there's some people that take time training very seriously. Mm-hmm. And there's some people who really only care about a split somewhere where they want to see how fast they are, and they can judge where they're going to be based off that. And so they may look like they're in 30th in time training, but they didn't put a full run together, or you need to go and look at the time sheet and be like, what splits were they fast in, or were they fast? And you see like 13th, and then all of a sudden like second, and then like 42nd, and you're like, ah, I see what you're doing there. Like, you're fast, but only you're just testing a section. Like, all right.
Yeah. I do like after semis, though, because then you can actually pick people that are in the race.
Yeah, that's true.
There are pros and cons to both. I like the idea of cutting it before qualies and semifinals. The downside, exactly what you're saying, Tanner, is do people lose interest because half your team ends up not making it to finals for whatever reason, versus – I think that I was way more invested throughout the weekend because I saw time training, made some picks, adjusted where I already had picked. Then qualifying happens. I'm like, huh, all right, no, they're worth my team. I'm going to go and add them. And then semifinals happen, and now you're like, well, shoot, like, I had Lori Greenland, or I had Ocean O'Callaghan. Like, they're not even in the race anymore.
I had both of them.
Yeah, like now it's time to move some names around. And I don't know. I think for people who are into it, and if you're already tuning into who's going how fast in qualifying, who's going how fast in semifinals, you're probably already on the site. It's quick enough to click in and make what you think are the educated guesses on who's going to go fast. I mean, this past weekend with Dooley flatting, Aris van Leeuwen flatting, and then Remy Meyer-Smith, right? Was that the correct, or is it the other?
No, Luke Meyer-Smith.
Luke Meyer-Smith.
DNF or DSQ. Yeah,
going out of the course after he crashed. Those three riders right there killed my team, and I think a lot of other people's, and that's like the fun of it, I think. You know, like, they're all people that should have been up there, and you can't really predict that. So
Dooley thinks like I do, dude. He got down to a spot, pulled his phone out, was like, where's my split times?
Yeah.
Is the pace there?
Yep.
It's so easy. Then you'd be like, super bummed I crashed. But if you look back and look at your splits and be like, all right, I'm top five in the splits, like, speed's there, it's fine. Mechanical happened. On to the next. Like, don't let it shake him.
Yep, for sure. Yeah, let's get into some talk. And I got to give a shout out to AREK, A-R-E-K, one of the users on site, because he was he's leading our B practice league right now. And I said I would give a shout out to whoever is currently leading it. Everybody in our B practice league is really good. Like, I'm still 25th. Like, most of the people in B practice are really, really good at picking people. Probably Where's because of all.
Yeah. How do I get into this league?
If you go to vitamintv.com,
I'm in it.
I don't think I'm in the league.
Go to fantasy at the top. There is leagues.
Oh, I'm in 84th.
There it is.
There you go. And you can join.
I'm ones joining that right now.
Aren't private, such as the B practice league, or Spomers you can create fourth. Ones with your friends. What'd you say?
Spomer's in fourth.
Man, he's a freaking sleeper, man. I'm telling you.
He's got some inside knowledge.
Yeah.
He's insider trading.
You know, he's the one who picks the value of riders, so maybe there's something to it.
We got some we got some hitters in this league.
Yeah. All right, cool.
Luke is up there too.
Is he?
Yeah, Luca Comedian, 21st.
Oh, man. See, I'm getting way too competitive about bench racing. I love it, but it's also frustrating. Especially when I'm like, I should know who's the fastest. I should know all the people. Yeah. All right. Let's talk about some juniors. Junior women. We'll start there. And I'm going to kind of talk about this from a fantasy standpoint. So junior riders aren't going to get above $60,000. That's where they will cap out at. So strategy, however you want to do it, I think that picking your winner for both categories is a great move, because odds are there's some key players in both classes right now. And then after that, a lot of juniors are pretty well priced. So doing your homework around juniors of who's fast on the weekend, who was fast at Fort William, kind of looking at those names, I think there's a lot of potential to get some points there. With junior women, I still think Arise Van Leeuwen is the one to win, even though she's fastest at every split by like, she was up by like 2 seconds before she flatted at Fort William. So I still think she's the one to put your money on. Same with Sach Ernest and Ellie Holzbosch. They're second and third on the weekend at Fort William, both looking really fast this year. They're going to be worth quite a bit as well. So you have to look at your budget and see what makes the most sense. Said this in B practice podcast, but Heather Wilson, who won for juniors at Fort William, we didn't talk about her last week because she wasn't on my radar. A lot of new names, especially in the junior fields. First race, first place for her. Big shout out. Sure, value will go up from last weekend to this weekend. So I still think she'll be somebody who's up there. Other than that, big shout out to Tilly Melton, U.S. rider for transition, fourth at her first World Cup as well. And another person that kind of slipped my radar when I was picking a team, at least. Her value, again, will also go up, but I think she's a solid pick for this round. Everything's so new for some of the junior riders that, you know, a lot of them is their first time at Fort William. It's the first time at this track. Sort of same, you know. There's not a balancing the unfamiliarity. It's all unfamiliar.
Yep.
Keep cruising through for junior men's. Sort of same thing as Arise. I think Asa is going to be hard to bet against at most of the World Cups this year. I mean, he came out and absolutely dominated, more so than I think any of us would have thought at Fort William. It was insane, dude. So,
I mean, that's what I would have expected out of a healthy Asa, to know that he was quite literally on the couch 2 weeks ago, just watching GoPro runs.
Eating spittles.
Freaking came out and beat everybody by 6 seconds. Like, okay.
Yeah.
All right. That, and so the cool part is, and I was talking to some people at work about this, is I love that he won, but I love how he won, because there was so – the kids, you have to remember, he's 16, like racing age 17. Like, there was all this pressure, all this hype. He hears it, all these expectations, all that kind of went away, which is maybe a blessing, knowing that he's coming in injured and was just like, results don't matter, and it kind of like wiped a lot of that away. But I love watching people take all that on and then prove it right. Like, he went out there and said, the hype is real and I'm the one to beat. Like, it was all question up until this point. It was all, yep, he's smoking everybody in the US. Yes, his times are faster than the pro guys. Yep, he laid the wood to a few top dudes who have had great World Cup results, but it's not Europe. He hasn't been to a World Cup yet. He doesn't know the pressure. He doesn't know the vibe. And he said, yeah, I do. And and with authority too, and just like all of that, I was like, hell yes, dude. That's You basically just said, I'm real, like I'm the real deal. Like, It was a question before and now it's not. So I love that. Like, and I think that was, it's been said before already, but I think that was the start of something really special.
Yep, I would agree. It'll be cool to see him racing again so soon. Second round, maybe different pressures than coming into his first race ever. Now he has risen to the occasion, proved that the hype is real. Different pressure, still pressure on him, but I feel like I've been thinking this and saying this all along, is that his race craft seems so evolved for how young he is that I don't think he hears the noise or really cares about it. I mean, Dakota was mentioning when we podcasted for B practice that he just genuinely loves to ride. Like, he wants to do laps. Yeah. Like, he, and even like his interview, he like genuinely said, I wasn't even that tired at the bottom of my run. Not to like put it in people's face by any means. He was just like, yeah, like I hit all my lines. It was so sick. Like, I got to the bottom with him, like that tired. I'm like, this kid is crazy.
If you would have let him, that kid would have went up and did party laps down that racetrack after the race.
Guaranteed. The jumps.
I guarantee. No way, dude. He would have done full laps, top to bottom, like another six, just for fun, because he loves to ride his bike that much. And Nico said that when he first put him on his bike at the U.S. Open a few years ago. And he said, do you want to stay after and ride my bike? He said, sure. And it was like first lap. Nico's like, all right, just take it easy. We're going to cruise down. We'll stop at a couple sections. Like, it's a new bike. Like, get used to it. And he's like, okay. And then just went like race pace, full lap, no stop. And Nico's like, who is this kid? Like, and he's like, I couldn't stop him from riding. Like, he just had to just lap and lap and lap. And I'm like, dude, let him go. Let him go.
Yeah, it's gonna be sick to watch again this weekend. I have no reason to think he can't do it all over again.
Yeah, so, I agree.
I think the only unknown is Tyler Waite, the Kiwi. You know, kind of almost like an ace from the Southern Hemisphere, from the way people have been talking about him and the way he's had fastest time of the day at some nationals and races with big elite fields. He was third at the first split in qualifying, then he flatted. So we never didn't really get to see his cards. So he'll be at Poland this weekend. And I'm excited to see how he goes. I think he'll definitely be on my team because I expect him to be up there. Other than that, really, like, there's a lot of names in the junior men's class right now that are all really fast. And it's awesome just to see how tight that competition's gotten. One person that stood out to me to think about for this weekend is Mylan Falquette. He had two podiums end of last year, qualified ninth at Fort Bill, and then flatted in finals. So his value or his cost for this weekend will likely go down a little bit, but I would expect him to be back up in like that top five range.
Yeah.
Sweet. Yeah. Keep moving on. Where are we at here? All righty. Elite women. Kind of turn it into the Valley Nina battle a bit. Like, Fort William was a dicing up of splits between the two of them. And I'm split in my mind on who I think could win this weekend. I think Valley has a lot of confidence, and she's kind of being quiet with that confidence on the new team, the new bike. Like, wasn't really too stressed over Fort Bill, came out and won and kind of proved that she's still the fastest elite woman right now. But Nina, Tawny, like, I think Tawny will be somebody again that's up there. It's rad to see her fully back in form after the few years she had off. So, yeah, interesting. I think elite women's feels a bit more kind of like the junior classes, where there's some standout names, and then I think there's a big group of women that are battling for the rest of that top 10. But it'll be interesting to try to decide, you know, like, if it's Cammy, if it's Gloria Scarcy, and some of those names. Yep, Marin Cabaru. Like, I think it's hard for me to, like, guess how they'll do this weekend, but I would think that the podium from Fort Bill will include Valley and Nina if nothing happens. Probably Tawny plus some other names mixing it in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you look at Tawny's splits, she was first at split one, and then just pretty much maintained third the rest of the way through, and was second at the speed trap. So she's got speed there. And if it's, I don't know, man, it's a completely different track. It's not going to be as rough nor as long as Fort William. So we may see some other players shake up some of the stuff, some of those leaderboards.
Yeah, I'm kind of looking at who's more of like a skilled jumper, like has that BMX style, I guess, coming into this weekend.
Yep, for sure. I get real curious about Millie Johnset, because she was having a pretty decent weekend before she crashed. So I think she'll be hungry going to the second round. Valentina Rose Sanchez, she looked so fast in all the practice clips I saw. And then she didn't qualify. I wonder if that was just like everything surrounding your first elite race. But she went and did that, you know, like got the first one under your belt, maybe didn't go how you wanted, but she looks really fast. And I think she'll be on the cheaper side for fantasy stuff as well. So assuming she gets through qualifying and semifinals, I think she'll be mixing it up. Like, but you're right though, picking somebody with the BMX jumping skills, I will say, compared to a couple of years ago, like watching the motorweight Fort Bill, insane how fast all the women are going. And they're not like, they're not just like making the jumps like maybe it once was. They're pushing through. They're like, there's some like slow shots of all of, like looking so sick over the jumps. So,
and one interesting stat that Chris Kilmurray had and posted, I forget exactly what it was, but I think what was it, the top three women were 1.8 seconds off of each other. And so historically the gaps between positions in the women's class has been 3 to 5 seconds. And then after the podium in the top five, it drops off, like can be in upwards of 30 seconds. And we're starting to see all those times get closer and closer and tighter and tighter. And so that's when you start getting these really cool stories and fun racing. And when they're not just smoking each other by 5 seconds, like they've all stepped it up. They're racing. Like it's no longer who can jump and who can't, because they all can. They can all hit this stuff. They can all do the gnarly things. And they're all like super supportive of each other. It's not surprising, but refreshing to see. Like they're out there, they're very encouraging, and they're taking that rising tide floats all boats approach to it. And you're watching it now. So now there's just like this bigger chunk of super competitive women. And it's been really fun to watch that.
Yep. 100%. Yeah. Totally. One last name I'll throw into the mix was Michaela Parton. She was 6th, 5th, and 9th, and kind of the same as Anna Newkirk, with like a 3rd in qualifying and then semis and finals, maybe fading just a little bit. Honing in, having to put in 3 race runs is tough. And, but I, those times are still times. They still mean something. So, yeah, Michaela and Anna, I think, will be continuing to build into this round.
Yep.
Finish this off.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Elite men. There are so many names to bring up and talk about. I guess if we'll start with who probably will be up there for winning the race, I think it's going to be pretty hard to bet against Loic this whole season. For him to come out and win the first round, and at a track that he historically was not very good at, Fort Bill, homie's on form and not really looking to slow that down. Troy was a little surprising to me, but only because I forget about him for some reason. Like, it's, I guess it was surprising to me that I didn't think about him, because when I look at him at Fort William, especially, great track record. He's like got to be one of the most consistent racers of all time. So to see him come out on a new bike, be in second, be stoked on it, like really hyped to watch him as well.
Yeah.
But dude, really, other than that, you get on the whole top 30. There's probably 15 to 18 riders that could definitely win. So that's part of the fun in picking your team as we go through qualifying and semifinals, and just who is vibing that weekend with the track and everything else going on. I will say
there will always be some outliers, but that top five from Fort William are like, I feel like one of those five are going to win Poland.
I like that.
There's going to be somebody who comes out of left field, now that I've said that. But
that's, well, who's the most likely out of left field people, do you think?
Andy Cole is one.
Loris.
Loris. Greg's hurt.
Benoit.
Out of those, I would say, Benoit can always win, but I don't think they're I think Andy or Loris are gonna be real close there. Ronan Dunn, maybe, but he's still looking for that real like breakout, so he's on that cusp. But I really think it's gonna be somebody from that top five. But because of how wild Fort William was, we're not even looking at Charlie Hatton, Lori Greenland, like those dudes didn't make finals. So
Bernard
Tebow. Yep. So
Angel. Ollie Davis.
Dude, it's mind-blowing.
Concerningly long list.
Concerningly long list.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with all of those names for sure. I think Benoit might be up there a bit more just with him being sixth at Fort Bill. He's always a sleeper. Like, he's so fast and he is more consistent than I think I even realized. That it'll be interesting how long this track is, because we haven't seen a GoPro yet. That's the one thing I've been kind of thinking about. Like, Dakota is really good on these short East Coast of the US style tracks. And if it's in that 2.5 minute range, I think he could be really quick. I think Bernard is fast on stuff like that as well. He is so efficient and good at jumps and all of that. Reese could also be somebody, Reese Wilson, that he's exceptional on terrain like that.
And just having a fresh track where creativity might pay off.
Yep.
Yeah. Can you add a wild card to the fantasy league?
Maybe. In what type of way? Like, they're weighed more heavily or something?
Yeah. So you just get, you just pick one wild card rider. Mm-hmm. And if it's almost like a jackpot, if you nail it, what's a win? 600 points?
250.
250?
Or so, just finals. Just finals, yeah.
For finals. So throw a wild card in there. And if they win, it's 500.
Yeah. Okay. I like that. Or you would do, or you could do it where the wild card is position based.
Yeah. Like, I was going to say, like, a 10th place or something.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it just changes every round.
We have an internal fantasy league for Supercross at Intense, and that's what it is. So we have a wild card rider that's chosen. So say it'll be, I don't know, McElrath. Uh-huh. And you have to choose what place you think McElrath will get. So you'd be like 12th. And if you nail it, it's, we do Olympic scoring, so it's minus 5 points.
Hmm. And that's actually a really fun idea.
So we could pick, it kind of encourages these conversations. So whoever we think our wild card is for this week, based off results last week, we could say Greg Williamson or Matt Walker, who, you know, they're great riders and top 10 capable, but historically haven't been, but Greg's kind of been on the up and up.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, you got a first year elite guy or new teams, like all the shakeups, and be like, all right, we could just say, I don't know. Yeah, Andy Cole was our wild card, and be like, I think Andy's going to get sixth.
Mm-hmm. That's so, what I was thinking in my head was sixth place.
Yeah, then it avoids you know, picking your Loic for the wild card and like nailing an extra however many points, kind of like redundant.
That would be a fun idea. I'm gonna pitch that to Stomer. Yeah. Do you want us to name it something? Like the hall pick?
Yeah.
John Hall's wild card.
I think that's a good idea. There's a lot of, I mean, even without there being a wild card, that even now, that's sort of the tough part is, like, I think about Loris. Like, Loris last weekend, to me, would have been a podium pick. Like, I'm picking him as my dude that I'm going to put a lot of money into, because there's a good chance he can win this thing. And he gets eighth. And I'm like, dang, that's freaking tough. Now, into this weekend, I still think he's going to be on the podium again. Like, especially looking at this track, and it reminds me so much of Maribor, where he's always done well. It's like won there two or three times. He is good on jumps. It's like such a light little nimble dude. I think he could be up there. Like, him and Troy are some of my picks for sure. Dakota, I'll be really curious about, just with, he's incredible at jumping and being efficient and smooth and all of that. But also, like, I know his bar setup is catering to exactly what he wants at the moment. I'm just curious with, like, the flatter, pedally, keeping your bike low to the ground. He'll figure it out. I'm just curious how that all works.
Dakota's one of those guys that isn't afraid to make adjustments.
Yeah. So, okay.
And I mean, extreme adjustments. Like, that dude will, if the track requires a lower bar setup, he'll put a lower bar setup.
He'll flip those things around.
Yeah. He'll go drop bar if he has to. or like a spacer option or something like that. So, yeah. I'm not too worried about Dakota adapting.
Yeah.
is set up to a track. He's never been one that's been shy about changing stuff. Some people like to just get comfortable and leave it and deal with it at each track. Dakota will not do that. He will optimize all the way up until he'll run something on race run that he hasn't ran all week and just go for
it. He was talking about a line that he hit last week in race run that he hadn't hit all week. And he knew he had to change it after semis or after practice.
I think the one line he was saying that after practice on finals day, he e-biked up to and looked at it and then hit it in his race run.
Yeah.
Like as last minute as it gets.
Yep. But he can do that. That doesn't bother him. You know, he's used to doing that. There's some guys that if you told him like you have to change your line right after their final practice run, they'd be like, no.
The thing about Dakota is that he's made a lifestyle out of this last minute thing. Like he's
true.
This is not just a racing thing. This is a lifestyle choices that he's made.
He's working on it.
It's more of a branding thing. You know, he's got to be on brand.
Very on brand.
Yeah. I think Lucas Shaw is like who I'm thinking is going to take it. Hasn't won a race, but he looks comfortable on that bike, and he's so talk about like efficiency. Him and Troy, those two are they a lot of times don't look like they're trying, but they're going real fast.
I mean, Troy's a poster child for tucking in aerodynamics. Always has been.
Dude, I remember the first World Cup I went to in 2013, watching him combine his race run and watching the way he was pumping things that I was just like standing up rolling over. I was like, oh my gosh, there's so much more speed in this trail or track that I did not realize. He's insane with that.
Yeah. 100%. He can get so low on a bike and tight, like but it's always been a strength of his, like, and he knows it. And so if it's a fast track and he can build and find that speed, then yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But like you said, Luca.
Yeah. I'd like your very first comment about the podium that we had from Fort William. Expect to see those names up there. Cause the more I think about them, I mean, Finn, we didn't really mention much in this conversation, but kind of goes without saying. I mean, he grew up in Whistler. Like he can squash a jump and carry speed better than anyone practically.
He'll be fighting right there with all.
And he's hungry. Like, yeah.
He's a powerhouse nowadays as well.
Yeah.
And he looks like he got like good.
Dude, good muscle.
Yeah. Looked like he like put some good stockiness on.
It was a heavy off season. Big weights.
I love it, dude. Looks strong.
I love the contrast between his bike and front end height versus Dakota's. It's one of my favorite things watching their runs side by side and just two ways to an end sort of mentality, you know, like
I think he's on like 10 mil rise bars.
Yeah. No, it is crazy. Well, I think that gives people plenty of things to think about. There's a lot of names in there. I think we'll see a lot of the same names in the mix. I'm hopeful that some of the riders that didn't make it into finals, we get to see last week and we get to see this weekend, pulling for our boy Pinkerton. Want to see him in finals as well, or at least through to semis and stuff. So yeah, should be a good race. I think everything we've talked about between your kind of main title contenders in each class mixed in with a bunch of names, plus a new venue. Going to be cool to see how people dissect it and how it evolves. And yeah, man, I'm stoked. We get another race right away. Can't complain about it.
Nope. I'm pumped. Yeah. It's here. Yeah. We're rolling.
We are. We're rolling.
Straight train will be rolling until July, and then it hits pause for a bit.
Yeah, then we had a weird 2-month pause, but then we're right back into it. All right, cool, guys. Well, thanks for joining again, having this conversation. Thank you, everybody, for listening, supporting independent mountain bike media. Make sure to play fantasy, create a league with your friends, have fun being competitive from behind your computer screen, and we will see everybody after the pull and race for a Be Practice podcast. Cheers.